Sarah and Micah are raising two kids in Champaign-Urbana. Raising children is always a challenge, but it's a particular one for Sarah and Micah. One of their children is transgender, born biologically as a girl, but preferring to live as a boy. Sarah and Micah have supported Daniel as he made the transition to living as a boy, and he's found acceptance at school and with friends. But transgender kids and their families have challenges to face. I'm Jim Meadows. Today on Focus, I'll be talking with Sarah and Micah, and a psychologist who works with transgender youth and their families. Our program continues after the news. Good morning, I'm Jim Meadows, and you're listening to an encore broadcast of a previous Focus program. We're not taking calls this hour, but we'll be back live on Monday at 10 a.m. on WILL AM 580. Today is National Coming Out Day, created to support lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgender people who choose to live their lives openly. And today we're looking at an entire family that's come out, as they put it, come out as a family with a transgender child. Sarah and Micah live in Champaign-Urbana. They have two children, one of whom is transgender. They've asked us not to use their last names, but they do want to share their story. Joining us also is Marco Hidalgo. He's a clinical psychologist in the Gender and Sex Development Program in the Division of Adolescent Medicine at the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago. The clinic that he works at is the only one in Illinois that works with transgender kids in a gender-affirming way. Marco, welcome to Focus.
Thank you, Jim.
And welcome to the program, Sarah and Micah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Micah and Sarah, tell me a little bit about your oldest child, Daniel.
Daniel is an incredible kid. He is very sensitive to the needs of others and nurturing, as overall to his little brother and to friends. He's a little bit on the shy side, so we'd call him an introvert, very athletic, kinesthetic, into any kind of sports, and a very well-rounded 8-year-old in every way.
He wasn't always Daniel.
Correct. When he was born, we came up with the name Naima, which we very proud of that name and really took honor giving that name to him. But at an early age, when he could start figuring out what he wanted to wear and what he wanted to do, he started gravitating towards boy clothes that he could pick out.
I would always choose a male swimsuit. We went round and round about this and wanted just to wear swim trunks. From early on, he would try to pee standing up, and he was really interested in sharing his time with his boys that were friends and wanted to do all the things that they were doing. He wasn't interested in hanging with the girls, and he's definitely more balanced now and shares a variety of friends. For as long as we can remember, when he started to have the choice as clothing goes, he was choosing masculine clothing.
Was there a certain point where that clued you in that this wasn't just a quirk or a phase, but really a major situation as to how your child felt?
Yeah, there was. I'd say the time that really hit us was a little bit over a year ago when we really realized if we had to put a label on it, we still prefer not to, he is Daniel. So we're using this term transgender repeatedly to put him in a box, but he is just Daniel. But it was about a year ago that we really figured out that he wanted to be considered a boy and what we were dealing with. And that was really in a large part to our friends that really helped us see what we were dealing with at the time.
But a particular situation that had occurred is we had once again encountered a situation where someone mistook Daniel and said, your son. And at the time, Micah and I were correcting people and saying, no, this is my daughter, and we'd get funny looks all the time. And so we went home after one of those situations, and I asked Daniel, I said, I don't want you to ever feel awkward in these situations when I'm correcting people. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to correct people and say, my daughter, or do you want me to just say, yes, my son? And he said, I want you to say I'm a boy, and that's who I feel like I am. And so very clearly at our dining room table, we had a very in-depth conversation about his feelings, and he was so articulate in expressing his how he's always felt this way, how he's always felt like a boy, and he feels like he's in the wrong body and he wants to be called by a boy name. So at our dining room table that night, we came up with Daniel, which is a little bit of comes from Micah's grandfather, and it's Micah's middle name. And so we wanted to keep some connection to an important name.
And it was Naima's middle name was Daniela. So we took that and shortened it and made it Daniel too, which just fit right in, it seemed.
Well, I'm really impressed that that he seems to have been very certain and just very articulate about his feelings about who he is.
And that's what really got us realizing what we were dealing with, because the way he spoke about it, we could tell he had been internalizing this conversation for years. That it isn't something that we just had this conversation this night and then all of a sudden he's choosing today, I want to be a boy today. No, the way he was talking, the way he was responding to the questions, he made it very clear this has been something ongoing for years and something he's been processing and trying to deal with.
And so Daniel was ready to go full speed ahead with telling everybody, telling the school, telling his friends, telling family, and letting them know that I am Daniel now and I want to be called a boy. And so we went to the school the very next day with plans to talk to the head of the school, Kathy Weber, at Countryside. And we didn't get a chance to talk to her, but Daniel was a ball of nerves. And he, being the shy kid that he is, it was still something so strong and big in him that he went and spoke to her himself at the first opportunity he had. And he sat down with her and he said, I feel like a boy. I want to be called Daniel. And we're just so proud of him for being able to express himself so clearly to an adult, which is often very intimidating for him.
I'm wondering what you were feeling and thinking at the time. Now, I understand you both have backgrounds in psychology and social work. So you must have, I take it you have some familiarity with working with family issues. But this is your own family issue. So how was it for you?
He was so ready to come out once we figured out what this was and what he wanted to do. He was ready full steam ahead. I know Sarah and I, we were still like trying to catch up and kind of figure it all out in our heads. Again, being a social work and psychology backgrounds, we always viewed it more as that he was a lesbian when he was younger. Always, you know, said that he pictured himself marrying a nice, beautiful woman.
And
he'd wear
a
suit. Yeah, he'd wear a suit, she'd wear a nice dress and go and dance with girls. So we define that as lesbian. As soon as it happened, though, I honestly, the first chance I had to process what this all was and how the community was going to react was when I went back to the school after Daniel came out to his principal. And I sit down with her and she just says, you know, Daniel's come in the room. He said he's a boy and he's going to be called Daniel. So that's what we're going to do. And for me, that was my moment of just, wow, it's going to be not as rough a process as I thought. And to have the school behind us like that, I was able to start crying in front of Kathy Weber. And that really, that was when I first got to start processing it for myself.
Kathy Weber is?
The head of the Countryside School.
Okay.
And speaking with friends who really helped us connect the dots here about what could be going on with Daniel, and that putting a name to this, that maybe Daniel's transgender, and just having this outpouring of support from our friends and family, it's been overwhelmingly incredible. And we feel very fortunate because we know the road is not always easy for these kids.
I think the one piece too is that even as our backgrounds, we still were a little lost and to know what to do. I was able to, through some colleagues at work, able to find out about the UP Center. And we were able to contact Kevin, who is head of the UP Center. And without his support, we wouldn't have been able to get through this as a family.
And just to fill this up in a little bit more, the UP Center of Champaign County is an organization which provides support for gays, lesbians, transgendered people, bisexuals, et cetera.
Exactly, exactly.
They offer support groups for families and just one-on-one meetings to talk things over, and they were there immediately, just as a support group to us and listening to us and helping us navigate how to proceed and how to communicate with our school to get Daniel's needs met so that everyone felt comfortable and that Daniel felt safe. And as Kevin put it to us, that it was not just Daniel coming out, but it was our family coming out. And that really has resonated with us overall and with Micah's parents, who were at the school the day that we shared with the teachers what had been going on and how we were going to talk to the students in his class about Daniel and make the transition be known. So it really was, and it was a mourning process for us.
You were mourning
the loss of our daughter and all that we had imagined for her, what life was going to be like for her, what you do as a parent. And so we had to recalibrate. We had to think of things different and think of all the different possibilities, but concerns of who's going to love my child. Who is going to understand and be accepting of my child are things I still struggle with, but I feel so much more confident now than I did in the beginning and have come, we all have come a long way as a family in our understanding of this.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking with Micah and Sarah, parents of a transgender child, and with Marco Hidalgo, clinical psychologist with the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, who works with transgender youth. You can call us with your comments and questions. Our phone number, toll-free, is 1-800-222-9455. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Marco Hidalgo, you've been listening all this time. In some ways, this sounds like a really simple, clear-cut decision-making process. I gather it doesn't work that way with everybody.
That's absolutely right, Jim. I think, first of all, I think from what I've heard both from Micah and Sarah, I just want to commend you both on the approach that you've taken, really affirming Daniel to be true to Daniel's gender self. I think that's really important. Some of the other things I heard is, you know, Daniel is becoming and continuing to develop into a really well-adjusted child and who feels safe and who he is. I think a couple of other things I think that are really unique in some ways to your situation, but also incredibly positive, is the example of how, you know, your child and how your situation is just a lot easier to navigate when there are people from the school, when there are people who are your friends who are supportive of this process, which can be really confusing for parents and for kids. I also want to add that I think, you know, the fact that you're in Champaign-Urbana, this really dispels the myth that suburban or rural communities aren't progressively minded, and that there aren't people there that are thinking about gender health of kids. So thank you.
Thank you.
Jim, to get to your question, I think you're right. There's a whole lot of variation in terms of what we see in terms of the folks that come to our clinic. Many of the families are they have questions, just like Sarah articulated a few moments ago, sometimes concerns, sometimes feelings of grief, but nonetheless are really trying to understand their child. There's always that sort of bottom line or red thread where in every family, regardless of how much confusion there might be, we meet some families that are, you know, it's very clear that there's just so much love between these parents and that child. And so our goal is really to help them try to understand where the child's coming from. And I think also part of our job is around education, because so much of what we know about gender development is fairly limited, and we live in a fairly, binary kind of society when it comes to the gender options and categories that we have to choose from. And we're now seeing that children are expressing a degree of fluidity in a very healthy and adaptive way, but that is challenging for many folks who confront it.
Maybe we can talk about some of the terms here, because I think we already talked about the difference when you were talking about wondering if your child was going to grow up as a lesbian, mm-hmm. which is a different thing from, I take it, gender identity. So how do we talk about these things?
Well, I'm happy to give sort of a very brief, but I think important kind of terminology background. First of all, I think the idea of lesbian and gay and bisexual, those fall under the category of sexual orientation, sometimes referred to as sexual identity, which is basically the gender to which you're most attracted to, sexually or romantically or intimately. And so that's very different than gender identity or sex. So I'll sort of talk about sex and then gender and two aspects of gender that we all possess, which are gender identity and gender expression. So first, a person's sex refers to essentially their physical anatomy, which is used to determine a baby's gender at birth, sometimes referred to as their natal gender. So in most cases, the presence of a penis indicates a natal gender of male, and the presence of a vagina would indicate a natal gender of female. Now, gender identity is different. It's a psychologically rooted, therefore internal component of each of us. So it's our core sense of being either male, female, both, or something else. So two aspects of gender identity to keep in mind are that, one, it's internal, so it's invisible to others. And it's therefore determined by the individual. In other words, it's not determined by parents, not by peers, not by the clothes that someone wears, not the toys one plays with, and so on. Now, people typically have a pretty solid sense of their gender identity by about age 6, and in most cases, this identity will match their birth assigned gender or their natal gender. And we estimate these estimations are not completely accurate, but we estimate that about 1 in 500 cases, this identity does not match one's natal gender. I also want to mention about gender identity that when we think about it, I mentioned that usually by about age 6, people tend to know, but we also see that gender identity can develop even after age 6, sometimes into adolescence or adulthood. So moving into gender expression, which is that other aspect of gender I mentioned, that's essentially how we externalize our gender in order to communicate our gender to other people. And this begins at around age 2, and that's something that, Mike, I think you mentioned, was that you were noticing several years ago you began to notice Daniel's gender expression, and that was notable.
So expression can come before the firm idea of identity?
Absolutely. And expression at that age can help the child. I mean, it's sort of a clue for many parents, and it's a clue that there may be some internal gender identity that may be different than a natal gender. But I want to say that's not always the case. So gender nonconformity, we can't conflate gender expression with gender identity, although they're both important, because gender expression is not always indicative of gender identity.
Micah and Sarah, I was wondering from something you were talking about earlier, and just the fact that in some ways you missed the daughter that Daniel used to be, or should I say that you were expecting. Daniel is here in the station listening to the broadcast. Is this mm-hmm. something you've talked over with him?
Before we get to, I do want to thank Marco, too, for what he said to both Sarah and I, and thank you for all the work you're doing up in Chicago, Marco. It really is helping families like us navigate the system much easier, and so I really appreciate all that you're doing.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
He has expressed himself to us. He gets what's been through, what it's been like for us. He's been able to express that both in writing and verbally to us and how much he appreciates it.
And we're a very open, communicative family, so we probably can be accused of talking things to death with him and how was your day, asking that in 15 different ways. But when it came to seeing the name Naima up around his room and in artwork that was around the house. And just in the beginning, it was really hard for me. I got very emotional over it. But I would share with him how I was feeling, that I'm so proud of him. And I want him to be exactly who he is, because what we realize is most important is helping him build his confidence, and that he has to go through something that most kids don't. And life is full of challenges as it is. And then you add this on top, where you, on a daily basis, he was questioning, which bathroom should I go in? Which line should I fit into? Having to answer those questions, and what confusion, and just how difficult that must be for him. But we shared it. We talked about it. He was able to talk about that he was a little sad. He likes his name, Naima, and that he was a little sad about it too. But I felt like all the communicating we're doing is encouraging his self-esteem and his expression, and that's just our ultimate goal as parents, is to help him be confident.
Well, what's real exciting lately is that we can tell that this has been a really healthy transition for Daniel. And one of the things that we've been trying to come up with, the middle name for him, because like I said before, his middle name was Daniela. It's now his first name, Daniel. And I had asked him, what do you think about putting your first name as your middle name? You know, how does that feel to you, using Naima as your middle name? And he was in complete support of it. And that really showed me that we had done things correctly as we could to support him and make him feel comfortable as who he is.
So it sounds like you recognize some importance in taking time to process this transition, not just saying, well, we've done it, that's that, don't look back or anything like that, but to remember everything that's happened.
Exactly, yes. And it was a process. And not just for us. There was, family members that had to process it too, and even friends. And it wasn't about not supporting Daniel and who he was. It was about that we all had to change our view of what things were going to look like in the future. And the big concern is, especially speaking for my father, is that his still concern is the suicide rate, the depression, the homelessness of not just the LGBT community, but specifically transgender kids, and how difficult that's going to be as he gets older.
And that's a question, maybe Marco, you can fill us in then. This is, we're talking about a child here who seems to have a lot of support. Is he going to be better off when it comes to those sort of statistical scary things happening out there as far as later in life?
Absolutely. What we know from some research that's come out studying actually family acceptance related to gender identity and expression is that typically it's associated with a lot more protective factors, including self-esteem, more positive self-esteem, social support, which is really important in so many ways, and overall health and early adulthood. And when there is an absence of that support, or there is a rejection or from either family members or peers or even the school, we really see more of a downward cascade of a whole lot of psychosocial adversities that Micah mentioned. So depressive symptoms, low life satisfaction, we might see isolation, self-harm, homelessness, as he mentioned, post-traumatic stress, and in some cases, suicidality.
I'm wondering, Marco, with the people that you work with, are there families that come to you that maybe are more socially conservative on the issue of transgender, that maybe might be hoping that you can change something?
We haven't seen a whole lot of families who are hoping to change anything or under the impression that we do corrective or reparative therapy. We do encounter, though, families that really don't understand and really have questions. Sometimes parents who are angry about the situations they've been placed in, where they've had to explain their child's gender expression to others. Sometimes parents who are angry about the fact that their child's gender fluidity might change from day to day, and you know, really want to understand that. And I want to echo something that, Micah, you mentioned, which I think is really important and something I talk to parents about all the time, which is it's absolutely fine to really need space to process these things. It's absolutely fine to have the feelings that you do about what can be very challenging at first. And the importance of that is to be able to talk about it with someone like me and do so privately in a family session where the child is not present, because a parent really could benefit from being able to talk about those things. And I think parents have to know that to talk about those things, those challenges you might face, doesn't make you a bad parent. And it doesn't mean that you're not accepting or loving of your child. It's going to ultimately make you a lot stronger, because there's so many things you're going to have to advocate on your child's behalf regarding. And I think it's, you know, many parents kind of find their voice through those sessions.
I have an email in from Kimberly, who thanks you for your courage and has a question for the both of you. What advice would you have for other parents and children to navigate through society's insistence on gender role enforcement?
It's a big question. I don't know if there's one easy answer. I know if I look at my background, and I'm coming from Holocaust survivors, I'm coming from civil rights movement participators, as my father was, and one thing I know is that if we don't speak up, nothing's going to change. And that I know we're caught up right now in society of, you know, what a man is, what a woman is, how they should look, how they should dress, how they should act. But I'm also seeing that in our society, we're not happy overall as a society. And something's going on there. There's a disconnect. And my suggestion, my recommendation is we need to stand up and support people that do want to bend and twist those rules a little bit and come up against those rules and be their allies. And that means we need to speak up. It means we can't just sit back if someone's being persecuted or someone's being made fun of and sit back and say, oh, we'll let them handle it. It's their battle. That we have an obligation as a society to speak up and support those that don't have as strong of a voice. And it really does come on all of a society and a community. And I know we're capable of doing it, but we need to remember to do it. And something that, I don't think it's an easy thing to do, but it starts with one person.
Okay. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a moment with more conversation with Micah and Sarah about life with their transgender son and with psychologist Marco Hidalgo. This is Focus on WYLL. Good morning. I'm Jim Meadows, and this is Focus on WYLL. You're listening to an encore broadcast of a previous Focus program. While we're not taking calls this hour, you can join our conversation on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. We're back on Focus on WYLL. I'm Jim Meadows, and my guests are Micah and Sarah, a Champaign-Urbana couple with two children, one of whom is transgender and who is exercising his firm preference to live as a boy. Also joining us is psychologist Marco Hidalgo, who works with transgender youth. He's with the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago. Micah and Sarah, what's it like being Daniel's mom and dad? I mean, are there things with him that, you know, that's just daily kid stuff like any other kid?
Absolutely. We just had a parent-teacher conference with his incredibly wonderful third grade teacher. And she, as we're talking about the homework complaints and the whining behavior that we see sometimes, she laughs and she just tells us that is what she hears over and over again. So, yeah, we're dealing with a very normal, very on-track 8-year-old.
You've come across a good degree of acceptance at school. I mean, they've seen the change happen.
I can't say how incredible the school's been. And this is even coming from Kevin, again, who's head of the UP Center, in that he's worked with schools obviously a lot more than we have. And his process coming to school, he's told us how understanding and accepting they've been. And again, the process of how they've sent letters out to the family, and when it starts, when the principal comes to you and says, this is how it is and we're behind you, you know it's going to be okay, because, you know, she does run the school, she makes the decisions, and it has been incredible. Going out to the class, the families of all of his classmates have been very supportive and wonderful. He's been invited to all boy birthday parties immediately, and we've had nothing but positive from the schools. But again, I do want to say that we have had this positive experience. It's not always the case.
you have a community that's ready to accept you. And mm-hmm. also, and it's the same way with the kids, which in some ways might be a reflection on the parents, that mm-hmm. That Daniel's friends accept him as Daniel.
So the day that the teachers made the announcement, they sat everyone, all the kids down at the carpet, and it's a second and third grade class combined. And basically it was said that you've all known Naima, and Naima's always shown an interest in boy things, and Naima would like to be called Daniel and wants to go by male pronouns. And the kids kind of looked around at each other and shrugged their shoulders and said, yep, that makes sense. And there was very little discussion, follow-up. Any questions the kids had, they were taken to the teachers. And within hours of the letter going home to the parents, Micah and I received numerous supportive, encouraging emails. And it just continued to boost our confidence in knowing that we were going to be all right. And we've also had wonderful support from our spiritual community at Sinai Temple. We made a similar announcement to his class there, and were again very well received. And there's been no uncomfortable situations thus far.
And that raises the question, and maybe Marco, you can talk a little bit more about this. I assume with the figures you were talking about that there are transgender kids everywhere, but the experiences they may be having may be different. I don't know if you've met any other transgender folks here in Champaign-Urbana, especially kids.
We have not, no, and that's one thing that we are missing. Speaking a little bit of Sarah's parents, just to give a little bit of history of that it was a little bit more of a challenge to her father, and that he just wants to seek professional advice. That's the way he was raised. You want to get expert opinions. But I'll tell you, the second he saw as he was reintroduced as Daniel to Grandpa, completely behind him. And so all four of the parents have been supportive. So what we then had to start doing is looking at where can we find other transgender youth that are Daniel's age that he can relate to and be friends with. Problem is, we couldn't find any around here, and we end up sending him to camp, which again his grandparents end up paying for to support us and to support Daniel. And that was out on the East Coast, so that's quite a drive and schlep to get somewhere, but it was very worth it.
This was a summer camp for transgender boys, girls, both.
Transgender youth. Yep, both.
Daniel was in a cabin with both male identifying kids and female identifying kids and three adults. And he had a magical summer camp experience where he could look around at all the kids and feel like I belong and they understand me. And he didn't actually want to come home after that week, but camp was closing. So he can't wait for next year.
You know, being accepted and feeling like you fit in, that has to be really, really special for Daniel. Do you worry about Daniel having friends as he gets older?
I definitely am concerned. Right now, his school's through eighth grade, so it feels like there's a little cushion there of when we have to really get concerned. But the transition to high school is what worries me more than anything. It's still a smaller community, not as understanding. And people are only going to know him as Daniel. And, you know, when dating comes in, these are all things as parents of Sarah and I, we are always looking to that. We can't just focus on tomorrow all the time. And we're always thinking about, well, what's going to happen when we get to this point? How can we prepare and start handling that situation?
And we're starting to think about puberty. He's only eight, but these things are happening sooner and sooner. And we're thinking about hormone blockers and cross hormone therapies, and those are big questions we have about how to handle these situations and what's going to make Daniel feel most comfortable. But these are big decisions we have to make coming up.
Marco, maybe you can talk a little bit about decisions like that with children in puberty. As far as how decisions are made, I don't even know what Illinois law says about this. Because I don't know what their recognition is of transgender conditions, especially with minors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important to recognize that the transition for a child who identifies as transgender or as a gender different than their natal gender involves two aspects. So one is a kind of a social component, which it sounds like in the case of Micah and Sarah, and Daniel, that's already started. So the process of the child really letting folks know how the child wants to identify, how the child wants to be referred to, and the family and the support system really hopefully following suit with that. The next piece is, you know, I think, Sarah, what you were mentioning, which are some of those issues that do come up around puberty for kids that continue, who might be gender nonconforming when they're young kids, and then continue to identify with a gender different than their natal gender. The idea of approaching puberty and watching their body change to be consistent with a natal gender that's not true to who they are inside is really distressing. And so some of these procedures that we have are certainly reversible, partially reversible, and then as a child gets older and becomes an adult, can do the less reversible or the more surgical types of interventions. Now, I think what kids who are around the age of puberty typically do are blockers, what Sarah had mentioned, which essentially it's a reversible process where a child who does identify as transgender or is gender questioning, that is really trying to figure out, you know, what is my internal gender identity, essentially they can go on these blockers, which serve the function of pausing puberty. So they pause the process so that that highly distressing experience of your body changing before you're ready for it to is paused, and you can either continue to understand your gender, or if you are transgender and you know, you could continue on those blockers until you're about age 16. Now, legally, you know, we speak more in terms of some of the guidelines around health. Legally, the age of consent in Illinois is the same as it is in most states, which is 18. But that's not to say that children cannot assent to certain medical interventions with the consent of their parental guardians or legal guardians. So, some of the guidelines that some of our physicians follow are the same guidelines that physicians follow here in the U.S. And also internationally around the administration of hormones to kids. And usually blockers by around age 12 is usually the earliest that a child can go on blockers. For cross-sex hormones, the earliest a child can go on cross-sex hormones is age 16.
So whatever the choices are made, Marco, what help will Daniel need to progress through adolescence? I mean, not just those decisions, but decisions as he changes school and meets up with more and more people.
Absolutely. So every child is different. And I would say I'll speak generally because I haven't met Daniel, and I've only heard a snippet, really, of everything that makes Daniel Daniel. But I think some of the typical conversations I will have with young people and children or adolescents are talking about their worries. So certainly, you know, what worries them about getting older and things around puberty and body changes usually come up. How do I negotiate, you know, who I am with my friends? That's a big one. That anything from how do I talk about my gender, how do I talk about explaining photos that they might see of me from when I was still presenting in my natal gender. I think some of the conversations I have with parents during that time is what I mentioned already, which is talking about gender development, talking about their process of coming to terms with this major change. And then also what I like to think of as coaching, which is sort of, you know, that was very I think nuts and bolts sort of tools that parents need when it comes to answering questions that family members might ask that are highly personal or that are sometimes challenging to answer, ways for them to advocate on behalf of their child with a teacher that may not understand certain things or with a school that may not provide gender-affirming accommodations for a child. So those are some other aspects of this kind of transition.
Sarah and Micah, you were talking a little bit earlier about the acceptance that your son had found at school, but also the really how happy he was to be able to go to that summer camp and meet other transgender children. Is he able to find the close relationships with kids who are not transgender? How are they able to accept him as they would any other kid, or is there still just something that they're not quite close to?
I think he has very strong relationships with his peer group here. We start to question sleepovers and wondering how are other parents going to feel about that aspect. So we do have questions, but we feel like it's really important to just be open with friends and with people that he wants to be friends with, so that, and we're talking about these things. We're not trying to hide anything, and we're just seeing where their comfort is at and how we can move forward. He feels comfortable talking about it, it seems. His confidence has grown this summer between camp, a couple camps he went to here, and one of the camps he shared with a counselor when it came time to change into swimsuits, which we had not planned ahead for. He knew it was going to be out in the open and it was going to be an uncomfortable situation. And so he went up to a counselor and he said, "Do you know what a transgender person is?" And the counselor said, "Yes." And he said, well, I am. And so he was well received. They said, "Well, let's find you somewhere else to change." And his confidence grew from that. He was so proud of himself for being able to express that and take care of it himself. So I feel like all the ways as parents, all the things we're doing to encourage him to express himself and letting him know it's okay, that this is going to hopefully carry his confidence through as puberty approaches and things become harder in some ways.
Switching a little bit, I do want to be honest, right? There are people that question our parenting. You know, why are you doing this? This isn't okay. And something, again, you got to know our family and you have to know who we are. And there was a talk I did have with Daniel early on, right before we came out to the classroom. And I said to him, he was a ball of nerves, looked very stressed. You could tell he was really nervous about how the classmates were going to accept him and take him in. And I said, you know, we can end all this nervousness and all this anxiety you're having right now. We don't need to come out. Would you rather not come out and end your nervousness right now? He looked at me and said, "No, Dad, I can't lie about who I am. I'd rather deal with these nerves and see how they're going to accept me than live a lie the rest of my life." And this again was a 7-year-old at the time. And he doesn't say these things. Again, he's a shy, he wants to avoid stressful situations at all costs. Does not like getting up in front of people. And so when he says this to me as his father, that I know him, he's looking at my eyes, that's all I needed to hear. I mean, this is how big it was to him. And I hope, you know, people that even just disagree and don't understand that this can start to see that this was big in him, and this was something he had been stressing about and had been holding him back. And talking to to Kathy and the teachers afterwards, he has done a 180-degree turn there, and that he's coming out smiling so much more and so much more outgoing at the school since he's come out.
And there can just be some degrees of certitude that cut through any anxiety.
Yep.
This is Focus on WYLL. I'm Jim Meadows, and there's still time for your questions about transgender youth. We're talking with the parents of a transgender child, Micah and Sarah, and with psychologist Marco Hidalgo. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. I was wondering, has Daniel talked about what he wants to be when he grows up? And I don't mean in the gender expression sense, by the way that all kids do.
We had a long talk on our bike ride to school the other day, and he was just telling me all the things that he pictured for his life. He pictures a nice house with lots of yard and room to play in, a trampoline. He sees himself having kids. He sees himself having a beautiful wife and himself being handsome. As far as job that he sees for himself, he's got many interests and he's not quite pinpointed one at this point, but he loves to learn and very active. So he's just a typical 8-year-old boy at this point.
And again, because we're such an open and we talk so much, talk everything through, my brother and his partner, they have adopted two kids. And they're our family. And so Daniel sees this, that even if he can't biologically birth his own, that adopting, there's no difference. It's all family. And so I think because he's been brought up that way and seen this as part of our extended family, that he gets it, that that's just something that he can do and doesn't need to stress about that either.
Markle, I remember at the beginning of the program, you expressed, you seem to be glad to hear that Sarah and Micah were able to find some support in downstate Illinois. I should say that perhaps something that sets Champaign Urbana apart from other parts of downstate Illinois is that it is a big university town, and I think some of the cultural dimensions of the community are a little different from a lot of areas of rural Illinois. Where do the kids, the youth and families that you work with, where do they come from, and what degrees of what degrees of challenge and opposition do they deal with as far as being transgender?
Well, I think overall there is a lack of resources that provide gender-affirming support, either in mental health care or in medical care for children and families. And so, you know, even in the city of Chicago, I mean, we are one of, I would say, maybe two to three other sites here that support gender nonconforming individuals. We happen to focus mainly on children and adolescents. So we see kids from Chicago. We also see them from the greater metro area, from certainly northern Illinois, northwestern Indiana. But we're starting to get more and more families coming from throughout the Midwest, and we're really the only center in the Midwest. And so, I think one of our challenges is that we can't seem to reach everyone in the way that we want to. And so part of what we're really thinking about is how do we then help other facilities, whether they be hospitals or community centers around the Midwest, to be able to provide the kind of support that we do so that we have more people out there that can help families in need. One of the things, though, Jim, that strikes me, and that I really want to say, and I think why it's important to go back to that comment I made earlier, and recognizing that Champaign-Urbana is a different in some respects than other parts of Illinois, and that it is a more progressive, perhaps, and college town, et cetera. But I think it should be noted that, you know, I think of Micah, for example. Micah, you're a father who's an excellent model of a supportive and affirming father. However, it really should be noted that fathers often have a hard time initially accepting their children's gender variance. And I add this because there may be fathers who are listening or who may eventually listen to this online for whom this experience might ring more true. And I think that's what statistically we tend to see. And I say that because over time, talking about what challenges them, talking about this experience overall, those many fathers come to accept and even affirm their children's gender development. And these are fathers coming from all over. And so I think it's really important to keep that in mind, and that even if you're a father who's listening, or you've met a father who has had initially a really hard time, or a parent who's had initially a really hard time, that does not determine how they will develop as a parent over the course of this child's life.
I'm wondering, Sarah and Micah, a facility like the UP Center in Champaign County, do they have a specific services or ways of assistance that a family that includes a family in your situation with a transgender child could draw on?
Oh, I mean, yeah, the support, and if what they can provide, they will find resources to support that family. And again, looking at some of the things that are our concerns is the cost of these hormone blockers. And again, we're on social worker salaries here, but these are things that, you know, navigating the insurance fields and how we're going to get support with that is a concern coming up for us. But as to your question, yes, UP Center, they are a huge support, and I hope that other families in the community could use them and go to them and find them, and they will support all families.
Okay. Hormone blockers and other drug therapies like that sounds like a big decision to make. Do you feel that that you're going to have enough time and resources to figure everything out on you and Daniel making those decisions.
I hope so. We're trying to do our research and to reach out to the professionals who have all this information for us. We do feel like we have a little time, but it is a little bit daunting. So we are trying to learn as much as possible and be prepared for when the time comes that we'll make the right decisions.
And I'm hoping, since being on here with Marco, that we can definitely exchange emails with Marco and utilize his resources up in Chicago.
Absolutely.
And if we haven't already, I think we want to make sure to add links to the UP Center and also to the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital onto our website, which is will.illinois.edu/focus. Our thanks to our guests for guiding us through this complex topic, Micah and Sarah. Thanks for coming on the program. Best wishes to both of your boys. I haven't even spoken about your younger kid. And thanks, Marco Hidalgo, for coming on the program. He's clinical psychologist in the Gender and Sex Development Program in the Division of Adolescent Medicine at the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago. I welcome any additional thoughts you have about our show on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon and with a big assist from our intern, Sari Lesk. Jason Croft is our technical director. Focus on WYLL.